Welcome to the PreparedX Podcast, your complete source for crisis, emergency, business continuity, and security preparedness interviews, news, and much more. Now, your host, he creates chaos for a living, Rob Burton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 37 of the PreparedX Podcast. In this one, I interview Michael Morland, the founder and CEO of Two Rivers Emergency Management. I spoke to Michael about disaster preparedness, as that's his field of expertise, and what he sees as some of the most significant challenges for communities when preparing for, responding to, and recovering from disasters. We also spoke about some of the more prevalent scenarios, as well as the importance of having strong relationships with your first responder community. This was a really interesting episode. I think you're going to enjoy it. Here's the interview with Michael. Good morning, Michael. How are you doing today?
Good. Yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you. Just before we get started with the show today, just for our audience, could you spend a few minutes just talking about yourself and your career to date?
Sure. So first, thank you for having me on today. So basically, I want to go back to kind of where I was before I got into emergency management. So my father basically was an emergency management coordinator for a county where I was growing up in the Midwest. It was funny because I was going around him and eventually met some people who worked for FEMA because of a local disaster that we had. And I told my father at that point that I wanted to become one of those people. Funny as that may be. And now this was before I understood the actual field of emergency management. And because I was around fire and law enforcement EMS all my life, I really decided that I wanted to take that road. And even though my father wanted me to go into computers because that was the up and coming thing, because I was teaching computer classes in school and web design, things like that, it was extremely boring to me. So after I was out of the house, I basically decided to join a fire department and went through the training to get the certifications necessary for those positions. And while I was on my first fire department, I attended a leadership meeting and met with the county emergency management director for that county, and then basically started a chain of me doing a little volunteer work for them. I volunteered there for a few months and then moved back to my hometown because I was offered a job on their fire department. So a couple of months later, I reached out to another FEMA representative and expressed my interest in joining FEMA. And I basically gave him my resume, didn't really know what would happen from it. Because the emergency management was kind of stuck in my head at that point, I decided to start my bachelor's degree in emergency management online because of the lack of brick and mortar schools in the Midwest at the time. A couple of months after I started, I ended up getting a package in the mail about filling out my information for FEMA. I had to get my fingerprints and all that paperwork. About 8 months later, I get another letter in the mail basically telling me my job title, my rate of pay, and that I'll be getting a credit card in the mail soon. So once I got the card, I was supposed to call this number and make myself available for deployment. Up to this point, I had zero contact with any actual person. I got my card in the next day, the number, and 15 minutes later, I got a phone call telling me to deploy to New York. It was kind of crazy with a lot of unknowns. I worked on an incident in New York City for a few months and then went back to my hometown and applied for a part-time EM position in a nearby city. So I ended up getting a job and about a year later applied for a full-time emergency management coordinator position for a county in Iowa. The Midwest is quite different with EM as it is in bigger cities. A much bigger responsibility as an incident commander for many incidents. And so I decided that I needed bigger EM experience and ultimately accepted the job in Florida as an EM coordinator, filling lots of different roles in training, shelter operations, operations section chief, and others that provided me great experience because I wanted to keep on learning and grow my career. And so I accepted another position in the Midwest as an EM coordinator, which ended up being one of the lowest times of my career, mostly because they didn't see emergency management the way that I saw it. Ultimately, I left that position and started to find my own direction. I started on a private incident management team and was deployed for one of the largest shelter operations since Hurricane Katrina and the largest pediatric shelter in United States history. I spent about 4 months there and finished as one of the shelter managers, which on my shift was responsible for about 900 children. After finishing there, I decided to dive into having my own business. I think my driving force was to do this was my past employers. I look back, and though I'm pretty grateful for the opportunities, I wanted to do things a little bit differently. I feel like one of the biggest assets is my employees, the team. This is how every employer should view it. And I now have, 10 employees, and we work primarily with government and healthcare organizations with emergency planning, mitigation planning, training exercises, and then other strategic guidance.
Great. Well, I appreciate that background there, very extensive. So, with that experience with regards to emergency preparedness, what are some of the biggest mistakes that communities make in their efforts to prepare for disasters?
Well, honestly, I think it's two parts. Promoting the need for an emergency kit for your citizens is a great preparedness theme. And, they have those emergency kits and those 72 hours of preparedness, a few different programs that they have. However, I think that we should be guiding the citizens through how they can recover from a disaster. And that flashlight, that food, the water, though those items are, essential, will not bring their home back. I think that we need to be kind of be focusing on the financial impacts to our citizens and promote the need to save money, especially with the decline in federal funds. I think far too often citizens, or especially those that have not been impacted before, believe FEMA is just going to come in and get them a new home, and this is not the case. Typically, FEMA's funds that they give to citizens is below 20% of the actual median home price in the United States. And this kind of leads into the second part. Embracing mitigation into community efforts to prepare for future disasters. I've seen way too many mitigation plans in the local jurisdiction that are simply just basically checking the box for a federal or state regulation. I think that we need to be promoting and developing quality mitigation plans that are actually useful for a community to prepare themselves for lessening the impacts of future disasters and the dwindling federal funds. I think there's a lot of counties out there that do not have or have expired FEMA mitigation plans. And really, we just need to try to keep that frame of mind of mitigation. I think that's really what's going to help us in the future. It's not just trying to check a box.
Right. And with regards to some of the scenarios that concern you the most, with regards to emergency management, what are, some of those situations that are of biggest concern to the emergency management professionals?
Yeah, I think that I have two. And one of those kind of leads on to from that mitigation part. And I think that it's the stop of or the lessening of preparedness funds, preparedness grant funds. And there's lots of FEMA programs out there, EMPG and HMGP and HMPG, essentially those funds keep getting less and less. And so really what we're faced with is ways to come up with creatively on how we can use those funds or lack of funds to help with our planning efforts. And a lot of emergency management programs that are out there are actually grant funded programs, especially
right.
In rural America.
Sure.
And even places in New York City. And so really what we need to try to focus on is developing a way for our communities to focus on how do we come up with those funds a little bit more creatively, whether those be, impact funds from new developers, things of that nature. So that's one of the things that really concerns me the most as far as an emergency management professional is those grant funds. The second is scenario based, and that's, a cyber incident. I think that that's one of the things that a lot of organizations have started to think about, though they really don't know how to go about it. And that plays into kind of the exercises, those tabletops, the functional full-scale exercises that really are difficult to test in terms of cyber. A lot of people don't know where to go. And really that is one of the things that can cripple this country is cyber attacks. And it's kind of been seen over and over again, you know, with the healthcare cyber attack not that long ago. And, you know, trying to attack our infrastructure as it deals with technology is huge because we rely on technology every day.
Sure. Yeah, it could be fairly significant if something was to happen, either through, you know, some kind of insider threat, or if it was the external threat that we hear about on a regular basis at the moment in the news. With regards to large-scale emergencies and as they start to unfold, what are some of the issues with regards to the first responders? What are they faced with an emergency as it starts to unfold?
I think that growing fast enough to effectively deal with the incident, having a clear understanding of the policies and procedures in place to deal with the incident. I think most communities across the United States, especially in rural America, are facing extreme shortages in staff. And this has really resulted in people having multiple hats, especially in emergency management. You see them filling multiple positions in rural America. And because of this, it is sometimes hard to handle day-to-day emergencies, let alone large-scale emergencies.
Right.
And for years, when politicians are looking to make cuts, they tend to cut public safety first. And really that has resulted in us not being able to grow fast enough to handle some of these emergencies. And, there's one of the things that, I try to implement in a lot of planning that I've done and what I promote to do is lessons learned. And there's lots of lessons to be learned out there because there's been a lot of mistakes. And not that every jurisdiction mistake during a disaster, but I think it's time that we try to capitalize on the mistakes that other people have made in terms of their staffing shortages and try to look at our communities and try to see how we can effectively deal with an emergency.
Sure. So what's your advice for an organization, then a business, mid-size, even a smaller business or any business that may be impacted by some kind of disaster? What's your advice to them in terms of continuity planning? What should they be doing?
If they're not doing any continuity planning, I think that really they're failing to protect those that they need to protect. And that's not just people, but it's also their business. And it's been, statistically proven a lot of businesses don't recover after a disaster. And, one of those terms is, if you've ever heard the term, if it isn't written down, it didn't happen. And emergency management programs in general, which encompass these planning efforts, are essential to communities and businesses. And now I'm not necessarily referring to like emergency management agencies or office. I'm referring to, a community's emergency management program or a business's emergency management program, and one that encompasses that whole community approach that is often, advertised. And the agency and office, is just a coordinating agency for the program. And because of this umbrella of emergency management, it's important that all organizations are preparing for an incident. And I'm sure you may have heard, about the seven P's, and I'll only reference six of them, is that proper prior planning prevents poor performance. And if you don't plan for it, then which means actual plans, the training, the exercises, then how can you be really ready for an incident? And, I understand that you cannot plan for everything. However, if you plan for nothing or a lack of planning, in some cases you're just subject to lawsuits or lack of community resilience during and after an incident.
Right. Yep. Great advice and comments there. As an organization, I think this comes up often, certainly as it relates to some of our clients. We always talk about those relationships and having that goodwill bank and having those relationships built ahead of time. Why is it important for organizations to build those relationships, especially with the local first responders?
It's important to integrate with your local public safety because they're the ones that you're going to have to engage in with during a major incident. And I think that this is important with the, for example, the Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services and their new emergency preparedness rule. And I think that they really were trying to integrate these 17 different types of providers, including long-term care facilities, into local jurisdictions, because up to this point, many times those facilities weren't integrating with their local public safety officials. And I think that it's important that these facilities are integrating with their community to pre-plan what they're going to do during an incident. And I think lots of communities have basically started these public-private partnerships that basically allow businesses to have a seat at the table when preparing for these incidents, and in some cases actually respond to an incident.
Sure.
And you've also seen that these businesses have come together and actually started, you know, some emergency operations center to help monitor these incidents as far as a private business goes. And I think that trying to integrate with public safety is huge. Trying to exchange your business card prior to an incident to build those relationships, know what each other has to bring to the table. I think that is an important piece to ensuring your community's resilience.
Yeah, it's about trust, right? I mean, we always hear that word that, we have trust in each other. And if you've, using the fire department as an example, if you require that response from the fire department to your facility because you have a fire, when they get there, if they've met you before and they've been on the site and they know what, potential hazardous materials are on site, they already trust your word in terms of quantities prior to sending their guys in to fight the fire. So that's just, one example I use on a regular basis, because we do a fair amount of exercises that involve those types of scenarios. So it's about that trust.
Yeah, and there's that emergency planning piece of it, and I'll go back to, if it wasn't written down, it didn't happen. But a lot of these facilities are just merely doing these emergency plans to kind of, like I said, with the mitigation, they're basically just doing it to check a box. For some regulation from state or federal government, and I think it's really about time that we try to integrate our local stakeholders, they're not involved in the operation of your facility, they still have an important piece of developing an emergency plan with you.
Sure. And as we start to wrap up here, the final question I've got for you is about tabletop exercises. And again, leaning on your experience, what are three of the major benefits of conducting simulation exercises?
So I'll kind of repeat one of the things I said. I think it's exchanging business cards prior to an incident. Hopefully you've done so before actually conducting a tabletop exercise. But if not, at least those discussion-based or simulation exercises are really beneficial for you to build a rapport with external agencies and organizations to kind of be able to know who you're going to work with when an incident actually occurs. I think secondly, the ability to test your local emergency plans, the policies and procedures prior to an incident, I think that that's really what's going to help refine your plans and really make them a great plan. And being able to test those and then come back and revamp them and then test them again to kind of make sure that everything is going smooth and that you're actually ready for an incident. And that, what you thought in your head is going to take place actually will be able to take place and is actually produces tangible results.
Right.
And third, I think it's perfecting imperfections and developing lessons learned for the next exercise. I think it's sort of like, swimming. You can read as much as you want about swimming, but until you actually jump in and do it, you never know how.
Yep.
And when your lives depend on you to swim, you better know how. And I think that that's really what it plays into with these emergency plans is we can write it down, we can talk about it as much as we want, but until we actually do it in an exercise or an incident, we don't really know how it's going to work out. And so I think perfecting those imperfections and really trying to, plan for lessons learned again from other communities, hopefully we can learn from others' mistakes before we make them.
Right. I like that analogy as well, the swimming analogy. That's a great analogy. Well, I appreciate your time today. That was an excellent episode, Michael. Do you have any final comments for our listeners? Also, where can they get a hold of you if they want to contact you?
Yeah, so I think that the biggest thing that I want to let our listeners know throughout these questions is basically – emergency preparedness and public safety is essentially like insurance, and you may not want to pay for the best coverage, but when the worst happens to you, you suddenly expect full coverage. And I think it's important that we embrace emergency preparedness and public safety. It's what's going to keep our community and business running and quick and recover more quickly from an incident. So if you want to reach out to me, you can reach so on our website, which is spelled out tworiversem.com, or you can give us a call at 866-755-8736.
That's great. We'll also add those into the show notes, Michael. Again, thank you for your time today, and have a great day, and we'll be in touch again soon.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Take care. That's it for episode 37 of the Prepared X podcast. I hope you really liked this. If you did, please rate us on iTunes. Also, if you're not signed up for our regular bi-monthly newsletter, go to preparedx.com and you can sign up for our newsletter on the page there. Again, thank you very much for your time.